Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a Dhamma talk on the seven factors of enlightenment. There are seven factors of enlightenment taught by the Buddha that are to be cultivated and developed further for enlightenment to be realized. This talk includes Sangha Q&A and discussion, and it was recorded at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey on October 29, 2016. This talk concludes with meta-intentional meditation. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation. Thank you. Peace.
So, this morning's teaching is on the seven factors of enlightenment. And it's another one of I cite two suttas in here, where the Buddha teaches the practical nature of the Eightfold Path. And describing these seven factors of enlightenment as both something that we strive to develop, and once we develop them, that we simply abide in them as the way we live our lives. There are seven factors of enlightenment taught by the Buddha that are to be cultivated and developed further for enlightenment to be realized. One evening, the Buddha, while lying ill, was approached by Sariputta's younger brother, Kunda. Sariputta was one of the senior monks at this time, and he developed a Dhamma rather quickly. He was important throughout the Buddha's life until he passed. The Buddha spoke directly to Kunda to plant the seed of understanding in his mind. The Buddha's words, "Venerable Kunda, let these seven factors of enlightenment arise in your mind. These seven factors of enlightenment are well expounded and are cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. They bring perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana." Nibbana is, it's often portrayed, or nirvana is portrayed as some type of like a Buddhist heaven. And it's not something that is extraordinary to the physical world. Nibbana simply means, according to the Buddha and according to his teachings, it simply means that we've developed the Dhamma to the point where we no longer crave for or cling to existence. We're in that flow of life where we're just simply mindfully present with what occurs without any reaction to what's occurring. Our minds are at peace. Mindfulness is a factor of enlightenment. I left a sentence out. That's an important one. Let me go back. I'm going to go back two sentences. These seven factors of enlightenment are well expounded and are cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. They bring perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. What are the seven? Mindfulness is a factor of enlightenment. Mindfulness is carefully taught by the Buddha. Mindfulness is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Mindfulness brings perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. So those that have heard me know that what we're talking about is the refined mindfulness that's rooted in concentration developed through meditation, that's able to hold in mind all eight factors of the Eightfold Path as the framework for living. Number two, investigation of the Dhamma is a factor of enlightenment. Investigation of the Dhamma is carefully taught by the Buddha. Investigation of the Dhamma is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Investigation of the Dhamma brings perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. So what is investigation of the Dhamma? Is again going back to the Eightfold Path. It's fully developing the Eightfold Path and investigating how that applies to our lives. And for most of us, that begins with the concentration that we develop in Shamatha Vipassana meditation. So we're no longer distracted by our own thoughts. We can start incorporating that refined mindful that holds in mind the Eightfold Path. Persevering effort, often called kshanti in Pali, not often, it is. Persevering effort is a factor of enlightenment. Persevering effort is carefully taught by the Buddha. Persevering effort is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Persevering effort brings perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. Joyful engagement in the Dhamma is a factor of enlightenment. Joyful engagement is carefully taught by the Buddha. Joyful engagement in the Dhamma is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Joyful engagement in the Dhamma brings perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. I know when I first, and this was after many years of Buddhist study, when I first realized what the Buddha was actually teaching, and that it was something that I could rather easily and through my own efforts develop, it brought great joy and great enthusiasm for me. And I was at the point after many years of so-called Buddhist study that I was getting very frustrated and somewhat dismayed about all the different applications of modern Buddhism. And when I realized what the Buddha had taught, that remaining or maintaining that joyful engagement in the Dhamma was something that really just came natural. I understood how valuable it was and how fortunate I was to be able to have come across it, that it's still available after 2,600 years in its purest form, and that I have a mind that's able to cultivate it. And that doesn't mean that I have any type of special mind or advanced thinking. The Buddha taught a Dhamma for all human beings to develop. It doesn't take any special powers or special favors. You just have to do it. You need these seven factors of enlightenment to develop. Tranquility is a factor of enlightenment. Tranquility is carefully taught by the Buddha. Tranquility is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Tranquility brings perfect understanding, full realization in the Nibbana. So shamatha vipassana meditation. Shamatha means to develop a quiet or tranquil mind. The Buddha is pointing out the importance of recognizing that and striving to develop that tranquility. And we're not likely to develop tranquility unless we can develop a well-concentrated mind, leading to the next factor. Concentration is a factor of enlightenment. Concentration is carefully taught by the Buddha. Concentration is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Concentration brings perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. Equanimity is a factor of enlightenment. Equanimity is carefully taught by the Buddha. Equanimity is cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. Equanimity brings perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. So equanimity simply means a mind that has developed a peace and calm that is not affected by what's occurring in our life. We no longer have a reactive mind. We rest in that peace and calm no matter what occurs. So most of you have heard me say that we can be at peace with a less than peaceful mind state, and that's what this is referring to. Because there's going to become times, no matter how awakened, awakening means full human maturity is a better description of it, no matter how awakened we are, there's going to be difficulties in life. That's stated in the First Noble Truth, that dukkha occurs. The Buddha never said that dukkha occurs only to unawakened people. What he's teaching is that as dukkha occurs, if we have a fully developed Dhamma practice, we will no longer react to life as life occurs. So something may occur in our lives that agitates us in the moment, but that agitation does not lead to distraction, and it doesn't lead to the need to have anything be different than it is. We are at peace with less than peaceful occurrences. Is that clear with everyone? At times that almost seems like a contradiction. How can we do that? And it's not something that can really be explained, but I think we've all experienced that at one point in our Dhamma practice. And we do experience it during meditation. In fact, shamatha vipassana meditation is a very good foundation for understanding this process, one of the reasons why we use it in a very simple way. As we're sitting in meditation and an agitated mind state occurs to us and we're engaging in the practice faithfully, I don't know if you use that word, we'll recognize that we're caught up in thinking and immediately come back to the sensation of breathing without analyzing what's occurring. And it's that lack of analyzing things, taking things in a dispassionate way, a less than personal way, that we're able to maintain peace and calm. Something occurs in meditation, we come back to the sensation of breathing. That's deepening that equanimity. And every time we do that, even for a moment, we experience what it's like to be at peace with a less than peaceful mind state. And that's perfect training for that. And then as we develop the Eightfold Path, we're able to recognize different areas where we're craving and clinging, and so we can abandon those too. The Buddha continues, these seven factors of enlightenment are carefully taught by the Buddha, and all seven are cultivated and fully developed by one awakened. These seven factors of enlightenment bring perfect understanding, full realization, and nibbana. Therefore, train yourselves to continue to abandon clinging to material gain, clinging to status, clinging to offerings, clinging to unskillful ambitions, and clinging to unskillful associations. That's the end of the Buddha's words for a moment. These seven factors of enlightenment are first to be cultivated. Like an untouched garden holds the potential for useful and purposeful crops, our minds hold the potential for useful and purposeful insight. As one would cultivate a new garden by preparing the soil, choosing appropriate seeds, mindfully planting the seeds to allow for proper development, and ongoing attention, the Dhamma is to be cultivated as well. With a focused mindfulness of the Buddha's Dhamma, distraction is minimized. To fully develop the innate quality of mindfulness, mindfulness must be exercised. Mindfulness means to hold in mind or to recollect. Holding in mind the Buddha's Dhamma, one remains focused on first awakening to the Four Noble Truths. One avoids a distraction of other Dhammas, disciplines, or ideas. So what that means is even if it's initial exposure to the Four Noble Truths, that then becomes our primary focus, developing a complete understanding and experience of the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths are the foundation of everything the Buddha would teach for 45 years, and everything that he taught for 45 years relates to the Four Noble Truths. Cultivating mindfulness, these qualities or factors of enlightenment incline the mind towards awakening. They all lead to developing discernment as to the what, where, and how of Dhamma practice. Like today, during the Buddha's time, there were many distractions to other ideas and practices seemingly helpful or even necessary towards gaining understanding. The story of the distraction and schism caused by Devadatta, the Buddha's cousin, is an archetypal story of the damage done by allowing grasping, aversion, and deluded thinking to interfere with the cultivation of the Dhamma. Devadatta achieved a certain level of intuitive powers through preliminary development, but gained little initial wisdom or discernment. He decided that he had a more comprehensive understanding than the Buddha. Devadatta was driven by the need to establish himself as an enlightened being and form his own Sangha. He wanted to introduce his own Dhamma. Devadatta plotted to have the Buddha killed so that he could take over the Sangha. And that's a rather elaborate story that I won't get into. But he failed in two attempts. He partnered with, a king named Upali's son. I can't think of the son's name. Who obviously had some power in that part of northern India. And together they plotted to kill the Buddha. Two attempts failed. And at that, when they finally failed, the king's son, which I can remember his name, became one of the members of the Buddha Sangha and faithfully practiced the Dhamma. Devadatta continued his ways. So Devadatta succeeded in distracting 500 monks to follow him. The plot failed, and most of the monks returned to the Buddha Sangha. The Buddha used this situation as an opportunity to teach mindfulness of the Dhamma and point out the dangers of heedlessness or mindlessness. This Buddha's words, distracted by 8 untrue Dhammas, his mind overcome, Devadatta is headed for a state of further ignorance, confusion. Which 8? Devadatta became distracted by clinging to material gain. Distracted by clinging to a lack of material gain. Imagine that mind. How agitated you would become when you're stuck in that mind state, that all that you really care about is material gain, and all that's driving you is a lack of material gain, and you're stuck between those two opposites. What an awful way to live. Distracted by status, distracted by lack of status. Distracted by offerings of praise and goods, distracted by lack of offerings of praise and goods. So isn't this an interesting sangha where the Buddha is teaching that anything we grasp after, we're also creating an aversion to the opposite of what we're grasping for, because we've created an identity about that. And once we create a self-referential identity, it's attached to all aspects of that life. We can't get out of it. Distracted by lack of offerings of praise and goods, distracted by clinging to ambition, distracted by unwholesome friendship, his mind overcome, Devadatta is headed for a state of further ignorance and confusion. It's for this compelling reason that one should keep abandoning clinging, craving, and any unwholesome association and unwholesome friendship. You should train yourselves. We will keep abandoning again and again any clinging to material gain, any clinging to lack of material gain, any clinging to status, any clinging to lack of status, any clinging to offerings of praise and goods, any clinging to offerings of praise and goods, any clinging to ambition, any clinging to unwholesome friendship. That's how you should train yourself. So, again, at a very practical level, the Buddha is pointing out to recognize and abandon all self-referential thoughts and put them aside, because they can only lead to further confusion, delusion, and suffering. And what's left when we abandon all self-referential thoughts? Then the ego is simply a function of its mind, its proper function, rather than what is guiding us and directing us in our lives. We have developed right view, the first factor of the Eightfold Path. With mindfulness of the, these are my words, with mindfulness of the Dhamma, holding in mind the Dhamma without distraction, investigation of the Dhamma can then bring understanding. As a factor of enlightenment, the Buddha is pointing out the importance of a complete Dhamma practice of incorporating the entire Eightfold Path as a path of enlightenment. The Buddha taught to investigate the Dhamma thoroughly without distraction in order to fully understand the Dhamma. The Dhamma is not magically imposed on the mind. The Dhamma must be cultivated wholeheartedly. With cultivation of persevering effort generated through right intention, the intention to abandon all causes of stress and unhappiness, distraction is minimized and mindfulness is deepened further. Through joyful engagement with the Dhamma, generated from right view, clinging to views is diminished and tranquility deepens. With increasing tranquility, concentration and insight deepens. Within the framework of the Eightfold Path, Shamatha Vipassana meditation develops a tranquil and well-concentrated mind, allowing for insight to occur. These qualities or factors of enlightenment are taught by the Buddha to remain free of the distraction of craving, aversion, and further deluded thinking. With gentle awareness of self and others, these qualities are mindfully recognized and cultivated with joyful enthusiasm as a practical response to conditioned thinking. The mind's natural non-distracted state, samadhi, is cultivated and developed, and equanimity prevails. That's the end of the teaching. Before we meditate, I want to meditate soon, so Judy can meditate with us. But any questions directly related to this, to the teaching? And we'll go around the room later. No? Everybody's got it? Simple and direct, nothing to it?
Like, there's a lot more in it than I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, there is, and all of it points back to developing the Eightfold Path, but yeah, there's a lot to consider when we consider all the things that we attach ourselves to, which are simply all the things that we should recognize and abandon. We don't need to cling ourselves to have a fulfilling human existence. In fact, it's just the opposite. The more we minimize our attachments, the more fulfilling our life becomes. I'm writing an article on restraint, and I'll probably teach it Tuesday. And it's a rather long article because it cites four different suttas where the Buddha speaks of restraint. But there's that's the foundation of what I'm going to say, and then we'll get to meditation. There's a rather common phrase that many people are quite enamored with, and the phrase is, life is a banquet. Life is a banquet, don't leave.
It's like eat everything.
I wrote it out. Life is a banquet. Don't leave the banquet table hungry.
Empty.
Almost.
Even empty.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, but I got it written down. So, so it means that we should be grasping after everything that life presents, almost as a way of life, that we're doing something wrong if we're not grasping after everything. And of course, the essence of the Buddha's teaching is just restraint, that we should recognize all that grasping and leave a few things on the table for other people. In fact, leave everything that we don't need at the banquet of life and take only what we need. And that's when we look at what we really need, it's very simple. We need food to keep ourselves going so that we can experience the Dhamma. We need shelter. We need clothing, but not a lot. And we need medicine. We need practical things. And the Buddha taught those four things as the only things that are really necessary for human life and the only things that we should look to be concerned with so we don't get distracted with wanting... I keep using this. I had a 9-year-old in class Thursday night, and it was great because I used my favorite chocolate cake that he could easily relate to. It's good to have one piece of chocolate cake, but when that one piece of chocolate cake leads to needing to have the whole chocolate cake and to have one on the counter all the time, that's craving and clinging, and it becomes a distraction. I can't wait to get home to have that piece of chocolate cake. Don't be attached to it. The cake will be there, and life will be there. All of the things on that great banquet table of life are always there. We don't need to hoard them. We don't need to attach ourselves to them to have them available to us. It's simply part of life. So, again, any questions before we meditate? And we'll go around the room. Okay. So I'd like to hear what If you have any questions about this morning's talk and how your practice is going, and since Judy's leaving, short, it's 9:30, so you have a few minutes. I'd like to hear how your practice is going. It's good to see you this morning.
Great to be here. My practice has been inconsistent, but last several days it's been back, and so kind of my mind went the same way. But I have been pretty mindful, I must say, like most mornings, of approaching my day. A right kind of attitude towards things. So that's been nice. I feel like I've been kind of, I was sick for a week, so like coming out of like a mind funk, you know, kind of sort of. So it's good. If it feels good to be back on many levels. So it's good. It's good.
Yeah, and practice is impermanent. It's always changing. I'm glad you're here.
Yes, me too. Thank you.
Jen, how are you? It's good to see you this morning.
Good to see you. I'm really grateful this week. I mean, today, just really grateful for you and for the practice and
thank you.
For everybody here.
Yeah.
I had a little nugget this week of anytime that I have one little phrase that kind of sums up part of the practice. I like to, like, so, and I'll go through these periods with, and like that'll be my phrase for like the week.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually just a few words. And I had a, my boss sent me an email, made me mad this week, and it's because I took it personally, and I knew that I was taking it personally, but I was still so mad. And, you know, the 10 years of therapy that I had helped me be really good at looking at my thoughts, but, and noticing, like, what was happening internally. But the self-talk was just, like, a little bit wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And from the therapy, like, it got me to a certain place, but it didn't get me to that next place. And, I recognize the difference between saying to myself, I have a right to be angry, and I'm angry and it's okay.
Yeah.
So saying I have a right to be angry turned into like this whole story about how I was justified and he was wrong, which always kind of was in conflict with my just general sense of fairness to him as a human being and to like his situation and where he was coming from, like my boss. And being able to say, you know, I'm angry and it's okay, like, just allowed me to be move through that and like not hold on to that story. So that was my little nugget this week.
It's a great nugget. It's really the essence of the teaching. You know, what's occurring in the moment is anger. Okay. It can't be any different. It's what's occurred already, and it's only going to be perpetuated when you start blaming others or blaming yourself and going down that, use this with a student this week, you going down that rat hole.
I call it rabbit hole, yeah.
Rabbit hole. Yeah, that's what she said too. She says, no, it's a rabbit. and it really is how, and that points back to right view, how
right.
You're seeing things. And to get into that constant external clinging, something's going on out there that's affecting me in here,
mm-hmm.
is a wrong view. What's going on in here is a reflection of this quality of my mind or lack of it. Yeah. So it's great that you see that, the essence of the practice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Laura, good to see you this morning. How are you?
Very good to be here. I'm well, and just glad to be here, come back. It's been 3 weeks. Saturday there was something going on, and last Saturday my family wouldn't let me leave.
You were held hostage.
So it's like, well, then everyone's sitting down and meditating right now. And that was, pretty unsuccessful. So very good at letting it be what it is and letting it go. I could
definitely say 2 years ago, I would have felt really angry and frustrated that it didn't go my way, or I had, you know, had a picture of the way I wanted it to be, and if it didn't go that way, I would cling to that. And so I, even in the work I'm doing with children, I have a little in-home child care, I'm really able to kind of bring the Dhamma into that and see that much more clearly. And doing just that, you know, I may have an idea, and I need an idea of the way things are going to look and the framework for how the day is going to go with the children, but they're children, and it sure never turns out. I shouldn't say never. There's times when I'm surprised that it doesn't really turn out the way you expect it to, because they're unpredictable and they're children. So
yeah.
Learning to really be present and mindful, and then like through that, like the right action comes out. So yeah, I'm telling the story, and they're playing with the toys and running around the room, you know, instead of getting upset that it's not going the way I expect it to go. I, you know, really can transform it through just being present and finding the right way to respond. So I'm really happy with, it's hard to meditate consistently right now, and I'd like to keep working on bringing it back to a more consistent practice on that with my meditation, but I'm really finding refuge in the Dhamma and the Eightfold Path regularly, so I'm grateful for that. And here I am, back at Sangha. Good place to be, so it feels very good. So thank you, everyone.
I'm glad you're here. Thanks, Lord. Regina, welcome to our Sangha.
Thanks for having me.
How was your meditation?
I found myself getting a little distracted because this is the first time I've ever meditated amongst others.
Is it really?
Yes. Oh. usually I'm by myself.
Yeah.
And I just kept redirecting myself back to just breathing and concentrating on that. But it's a little different, so well, thank you for having this class.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. You'll find we're very fortunate to have the Sangha that we have here, and it's well focused. And I hope you continue to join us. You'll find a great support here. You know, I do. I've been meditating for a long time. So glad you're here. Keith, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, John. Well, my practice was going excellent. I couldn't ask for better. And then I found myself, when I would sit down to meditate, I was spending more time congratulating myself on doing such a great job. I had such a great effort, and I wasn't focusing on my breath. And then I started to get a little bit sick and distracted and didn't meditate for a few days. And it's amazing how quick you can revert back to everything you conditioned to think and... So, anyway, I'm back on track now. Everything seems to be going back, but it's almost like I can't get back in right away to where I left off. Like, it's going to take me a while to get back there. But I do have the intention to continue twice a day, right back where I was, and I'll get my mind back to where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, you will. Rather quickly, too. It's kind of a common theme, too, about this impermanence of practice and to be able to sustain it. And I don't know that I've ever met anyone that came to the Dhamma and for the rest of their lives they were just framed by the Eightfold Path. It takes a while to develop it. We fall in and out of that framework and that mindfulness of it. But that's part of practice, too, just that you recognize it is the most important thing and you see the difference. That word, kshanti, I used it once before, patient forbearance. It also means we need to be patient with ourselves. You know, we're not gonna do it perfectly. We're not all gonna be Kundana, who heard the Buddha's first words and that was it. He was awakened. You know, it takes a little time for most of us. But I'm glad you're here.
Me too, thank you.
Debbie, good morning. It's good to see you.
Good to be here again.
See you, Judy.
Bye. Bye.
Don't forget the Donna dinner.
So I'm kind of sticking with my morning practice has been consistent. I still don't, you know, sometimes during the day I get a second practice, but not usually toward the evening. And I'm trying to do a morning practice that's kind of both a mindful meditation and followed by the meta meditation. I'm trying to do a daily meta meditation. I feel like I'm seeing some of the fruits of that, and that feels good.
Yeah.
Especially around, well, compassion, you know, especially I feel like I'm seeing the fruits of it in terms of when I get hooked in, when my ego gets hooked in, that sometimes it's the ability to be compassionate that helps me step out, you know, and step into just, okay, so, you know, be in the moment with my own, like, kind of like Jen was saying, with my own feelings, whatever they are. But the compassion for the other person is what's helping me do that more, to get in touch and stay with my own feelings and not get caught up in the interchange, you know.
Yeah.
So that's been nice. And I'm trying to use, you know, my mindfulness more at work because there's kind of a lot of constant change and constant kind of projection for me, projection, fear, like, oh my God, am I going to be able to do this? Oh my God, can I keep up? And
yeah.
You know, so I'm just trying to, okay, just do what I have to do today, you know, and bring myself back. And that's how I'm surviving at work, and so that's been helpful too.
Yeah, that's great. Developing a realistic view of your own life. And, in meta, it's such a powerful tool, you know, at any time. So Lorna suggested maybe a year ago that I combine a shamatha vipassana meditation that finishes with metta, and so there's a recording of that on the website too. You might find it helpful. But yeah, thank you. Glad you're here this morning. Lorna, it's good to see you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I'd just like to mention that just as I started meditating, the Canada geese are chirping away down there, and we have the aroma of coffee in here. And I thought, what a great place to meditate this is. And it was just beautiful. I mean, just the geese were just like, you know, and there was a aroma of coffee, some of the members here. And, so I just want to thank you. I mean, you're bringing this all together every week, and so I just want to thank you. As far as my practice goes, I think I'm doing quite well off my cushion. Probably a bit better off my cushion than on, but this week I've really begin to realize that your mind has got, you've got two sort of balance points in your mind. You can let your thoughts and your ego and your emotions and stuff run away with you, or you have the, you know, the other way, the Dharma way, you know, keep your emotions and not get and not get your ego into things and not, you know, just sort of keep that balanced. And I've really sort of seen that in my life a little bit this week. And you can use it as a balance scale. You know, you can, this signals up and this comes down, and you know, you need to focus on the down. So I've been mindful of that, and I've really seen it this week. And I've also realized that if you can be in that quieter mind state, which is not as erratic and not so emotional, and your ego, and all, at the end of your day, you're not so ragged. You know, you're just not so pooped out with the day. You know, you know, there's a little bit of you left in the day, left in you, and you've not been pulled in every which direction. You know, that you just, at the end of the day, I think you feel better.
Yeah.
You can have a day like that. So I've noticed that. But I've just been mindful of some of the good stuff. As I say, my meditation on the cushion, I think of, although I, you know, I'm on my chair and meditate, I've done my 20 minutes, I've done, And that's where I've been looking at it. I need to sort of really start, really just kick in with the meditation again, and not just, even though you say, you know, if you get caught up in your thoughts, come back to your breath, even that's not full meditation. You have to have that conviction of, this is what you're going to do for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
This is it. Forget, and remind yourself you're withdrawing from the outside world, and you to meditate really is to, you know, just withdraw from other stuff and think about your breath.
Yeah.
And just, that's what you're doing for 20 minutes. Yeah. And I need to really sort of kick in with that attitude a bit. I've let that go a little bit. So just, I've been sitting on my chair, I've done it some, and I've, you know, I've done it okay. Well, not really. There's a little bit more to it. The effort you have to put into it. You don't have to put effort into it. I've let that go. Oh, and then during today's talk, I've never seen you ad-libbed a little bit about when you cradling, clinging. When you're craving something, you're also you didn't use the word rejecting. Present time that you're in, you kind of phrase it a little bit differently. Do you remember what you said?
Oh.
Or do we have to listen to
creating aversion? Did he say creating aversion?
Yeah, that must have been it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Craving is I don't know exactly how I said it this morning because I don't pay attention to what I say. But craving is a form of aversion. It's the other side of the same coin.
That's what you said. Yes. I hadn't seen that.
Really?
I recognize craving. Seeing that I'm avoiding the situation I'm in.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the flip side.
So the aversion is craving that the situation be different than it is.
I know, you say these things all the time, and then the 199 times we get it, that's what I got this morning.
That's why I'm so repetitive.
Well, that's true. Anyway, thank you.
Keith was talking a little bit about this too. Our meditation practice, when we bring other things in, and it's at a very subtle level at times, we want it to be different than just meditation. And if you remember, Shamatha Vipassana meditation is to deepen concentration. And so during that 2 minutes or 20 minutes or half hour, we're meditating and not doing anything else, not trying to figure out our lives, not trying to analyze anything. And you can do that. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't consider things that are going on outside and inside yourself, but just don't use meditation for it. Meditation is for deepening concentration. If there's some troubling things in your life and you want to use a meditative practice to consider those, you can quiet your mind with Shamatha Vipassana meditation and then think about it with that quiet, well-concentrated mind, but don't substitute that for a meditation practice. It should be something, you know, then you're using the tools of concentration and refined mindfulness the way they're meant to be, not as a substitute for meditation. You know, it's part of integrating the entire Eightfold Path. So thank you for bringing it up. Ellie, it's good to see you.
Good to be here.
How are you?
Good. My practice has been inconsistent, theme of the day, I guess.
Theme of the day, yeah.
You know, it's a time of year where work's really busy and overwhelming, and I feel like the entire world is spinning out of control, so I'm very distracted. But I think in my practice, I'm cutting myself an enormous amount of slack. Like, okay, I redirected my mind once, good, okay, now I can stop. you know, and you always say be gentle with yourself, but I think I'm realizing that there needs to be a lot more right effort.
That's right.
On my part.
It's great that you recognize. I mean, that's really the essence too, is recognizing what we need to do. That's an aspect of that refined mindfulness. So good for you. I'm glad you're here this morning. How's James doing, your brother?
Doing really well.
Please tell him I said hello. Mary, good morning. It's good to see you.
My practice has been fairly consistent, but in terms of my life, I'm stuck in that aversion loop. And you know, hearing the talk today, and I read through it once, and it made sense, but somehow hearing it. Always makes it make more sense to me, or it sinks in better. And, you know, when I recognize that I am caught in a loop and I need to, you know, change prep a little bit.
Yeah.
And just accept things as they come. They're really, I mean, what choice do you have otherwise? You're,
I really don't.
You're pissing in the wind.
Yeah. And again, you developed a refined mindfulness to recognize that, and that loop is just part of our conditioned thinking.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not, when we're caught in it, it can seem very substantial and difficult, but it really is, the Buddha's often used the word, it's like foam on an ocean, you know. There's really no substance to it, but because of conditioned thinking, it seems like, boy, this is difficult. The more we address it and deepen our concentration, the more like foam it is, and the less it seems so substantial. So thank you for bringing that up. Great class. It is interesting that the theme, we're all kind of experiencing that impermanence of our commitment and the effectiveness of the Dhamma. But it's so important to just recognize that. It's just the way it is, you know, for most of us anyway. Like, most of us aren't Kundana. Takes a while. We got to keep coming back to it. But again, the Buddha recognized that upon his awakening, and that's what he considered for a few more weeks. How can I get through this, the common human problem of conditioned thinking? And while he thought about that, he developed an Eightfold Path to do exactly that. That's why it's so important. That's why I keep coming back to it. We can't do it with just meditation. We can't do it with kind of an idealized view of how we'd like ourselves and the world to be. We need an Eightfold Path to do it. And we're all developing that very well. And it's another reason why we're so fortunate to have what we have here. It's a well-developed sangha that's focused on that and not other things. And it doesn't mean that other things are wrong, but they can be a distraction. You know? The most important thing is to develop the Dhamma and awaken. And then we're good to go with anything we want to do. A few quick announcements. The first one is Dhana Dinner, November 22nd, Tuesday of Thanksgiving week. There's some flyers out there, info on the website. But please invite your friends and family. Everyone's welcome. It's really an incredible event. This will be our seventh, I think. We're asking for some volunteers to help set up and clean up, and there's a form on the website that you can send to Maura, who's coordinating that. Just send her an email saying you'd like to do this. There's also some gift suggestions if you want to bring a gift. And we're also, Julie Klein, the owner of Love and Oven, where we have the dinners, has never asked for a penny, and they provide the main meal and dessert and obviously the facility. So this year's Dhana project, we'd like to take a collection and give it directly to Julie. So there's a basket out there. So it'd be nice to do that for her. It's really incredibly generous of her to close down her restaurant and do what she does. So let's support her that this year. December 4th is our next one-day retreat right here in this room. The focus is on taking refuge. It'll be from 10 to 3 about. There's info on the website about that too. The following week, on December 6th, we're going to start our Truth of Happiness 10-week course like we did last year. So the same class on Tuesday will be repeated on Saturday. That way, if there's a weather problem or you miss the Tuesday, we can keep that. And it really was a great experience last year. It kind of solidified the Sangha. I think that's the last announcement. That's not all.
The one day retreat.
Yes, December 4th.
Did you mention that?
I did.
Oh, okay. I need to be more mindful of it. So.
Yeah.
199 times.
That's how it works. That's how our conditioned thinking works. Well, okay, let's finish with metta, and we'll finish with the Buddha's words on metta. So find your relaxed meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And again, take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body and let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future, or that may have arisen from our talk today. And metta is both an aspiration for those of us on the path, and it's an expression of an awakened, a fully mature human being. And these are the Buddha's words on metta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety may all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Peace. Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.